Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
And welcome, 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 my wonderful audience around the world, leaders in the field, reformers, people who care, a wonderful group. I'm so glad to be getting better in touch with you. And this is, again, one of my very early shows on the new format. We take questions now. We have call-ins. We have only a limited number of lines, so you can call in early in the show and listen to the show and just stay on the line if you like. The call-in number, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And I'll try to remember to give you that number again. And I'm appreciating the emails we're getting. It's going to help set the direction of the show. I want to interact. I want to be doing things with you. The email is very simple, breganlive@hotmail.com. breganlive@hotmail.com. The call-in number again, 888-874-4888. And the email, breganlive@hotmail.com. A giant leap for me in doing this. And we are now going into our second or third show with this. And I'm just really, really delighted to be relating to you. And as I've mentioned to you before, and in my alerts, I'm going to be giving you some sort of an interesting news item and a commentary, maybe on life itself each time. And next week, again, part of the new format, next week, it's just going to be me, just me. So if you call in next week, I'm learning to do repetition, on July 18th, you call in July 18th, listen to the show. I'm going to talk about what's on my mind, and I want you to call in and talk about what's on your mind. Entirely new format. Peter Bregan enters, what century is it? I think it's the 21st. I was in the 20th for so long. So enter in, and we are going to talk together. And remember, we have only a few lines, so just grab one and hold on to it for a while. 888-874-4888. And if you're especially interested in benzodiazepines today from New Zealand and also via Japan, we're going to have Wayne Douglas on the line. And today is Benzodiazepine Awareness Day around the world. We'll be talking about that. You can call in and ask questions of me or Wayne or both of us about these issues. And today I thought I would talk just briefly about something really striking to me that just came out in Psychiatric News on July 6th. Psychiatric News is the official weekly newspaper of the American Psychiatric Association. I want to help you get inside the head of psychiatrists, because if you can get there, you will never view the world the same. You will have a deeper understanding of the politics of psychiatry, the bizarreness of the internal life of people who can believe the kinds of things and do the kinds of things my colleagues are increasingly doing. The front page of the Psychiatric News has a headline: suicide deaths climb dramatically in U.S., nearly double for women. Now, I want you to think about that. How many of you on hearing this? Suicide deaths climb dramatically in U.S., nearly double for women. And you see this graph, this terrible red line going up on the overview of all suicides, reaching 45,000 in the U.S. for the year. Do some of you think that every psychiatrist must be thinking, well, we've certainly more than doubled the rates of antidepressants. What's going on here? Are the antidepressants causing it? Are the antidepressants stopping it? Well, over the past many years, there have been lots of articles by psychiatrists in the pay of drug companies picking some place or time where the suicide rate has gone down and claiming it's due to antidepressants. We have had this. We have had this up to the neck with fake, phony psychiatric articles on the subject of suicide rates going down. Well, of course they haven't. They've had the gerrymander, good political term. They've had the gerrymander their research and to get there. Now, as you read this whole article, suicide deaths climbing dramatically in the U.S., wouldn't you expect that since they've written so much about how antidepressants are actually lowering the suicide rate, they'd at least raise the issue? Does this have anything to do with antidepressants, which are known to cause suicidality? Or is it due to the fact that we're learning in study after study that antidepressants don't work? Does that have to do with they're not working? Or does that have to do with they're worsening the situation? There's not a breath about anything about antidepressants in this lengthy front page, multicolor article. So that's who we're dealing with, folks. If you think psychiatry is a science, think about this article. This article is ideology. It's like reading something from the extreme left that ignores the facts, or reading something from the extreme right that ignores the facts, and is just doing talking points. And the talking point here is we need more psychiatry. Suicide's going up. We need more psychiatry. Instead of maybe we need less. Maybe we need much less. Maybe we need like zero antidepressants. So I'm going to leave you with that thought. And then my next thought is, and I hadn't thought in advance about this, it's really hard to get inside the heads of people who are into social control, into controlling their patients, controlling their families. It's a hard, difficult task. And one of the reasons why psychiatry gets away with the way it is that most folks like you and me and Wayne Douglas, my wonderful guest, we'll hear from him in a couple of minutes. Most of us can't imagine people whose sole goal is to make things turn out right for themselves, no matter what. But that's how psychiatric associations work. It's how almost all large organizations work. But in psychiatry, since the product they sell, drugs, are doing more harm than good, they have to totally distort what they're doing. The same weekly issue has an article about, two articles about ECT, one celebrating the 80th birthday of electroshock treatment, one talking about looking ahead to new things in shock. The one article I saw about psychotherapy was dog therapy. That is using dogs to help in therapy. They don't know about people, folks. That's the problem. They don't know that human relationship is what heals. Human relationship is what heals. So that's my message. I give you all lots of love and attention, and I enjoy hearing from you. And once again, the call-in number is 888-874-4888. Climb aboard, take up one of the few spaces, and hang on for a chance to comment. And email, just let me know what you think of the new format and the liberated Peter Bregan from the old format. It's breganlive@hotmail.com. Wayne Douglas, today is a big, big day for you. You are the founder, co-founder of this day. And Wayne comes from lived experience with benzos in Japan. I want him to tell you a little bit about that, but I also want him to just jump in and talk to us about what's going on around the world on this day today. Hi, Wayne. Welcome aboard.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me back on the show. It's a pleasure.
Oh, yeah, and you sound great. You're on Skype, and I'm on Skype, and
Yes.
this is fabulous. And thank you, PRN, wonderful Progressive Radio Network, and and my engineer. I was making a little crazy today. I think it's Jess. Maybe he can instant message me. Making him crazy today. We're getting confused between radio and Skype, and et cetera, et cetera. But here we are, we're doing good, and the radio station is just always gets me through my technological confusions. So, sir, introduce
Yes.
us again to what is today all about and what are you about?
Yes. So, Peter, as you know, this is our third show together now. And during the first show, we talked a bit about my personal struggle with benzodiazepines that were incorrectly prescribed without informed consent, which seems to be quite common. That is, people not being given proper informed consent. It led to a lot of problems with tolerance withdrawal, dependency withdrawal symptoms, side effects. Of course, there's also the toxicity, the neurological damage, and I mean, it just destroys people. From my own experience, from the stories I've heard, people are just shattered, and people are bedridden. They lose their jobs. That destroys families. People housebound. It just takes years and years, and people suffer from this for many years. And so, our first interview was sort of about my personal story there and my personal suffering. The second interview we did, as you know, was about the founding of World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. The idea was initially conceived by Barry Haslam in the UK, a veteran campaigner of about 30 years. So I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Barry for all of his contributions over the decades. It's just been immense, and it's an honor to have him as the founder of this day. And in this interview today, Peter, I would like to talk about what's going on today. Today is July 11, World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, which was designated in honor of Professor Heather Ashton, whose birthday it is today. As you know, she's considered an authority on the subject of benzodiazepine dependency. She ran a withdrawal clinic in England, in Newcastle, for 10 years, as did Professor Malcolm Lader. He ran a benzodiazepine withdrawal clinic in London, both of them under the NHS. They were since closed down, and there is very little help for people suffering from this traumatic illness now, anywhere, I believe. So we decided that not much was happening in the way of change. So we thought that we need to empower the people to give people a voice. And the concept of having a World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day seemed very appealing for this purpose. And so it provides people with opportunities to speak up about the damage that it's been that these drugs can cause. So this year, last year, the people on the team, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank them. I mean, they're going through serious withdrawal, and all credit to them to be able to help put this day together in that condition. It's immense. It's like running two marathons after you've consumed large amounts of alcohol. I mean, I didn't even know how to compare it. It's just unspeakable. But just to put it simply, the job they're doing is just outstanding. So I'd like to give a big shout out to them. Thank you so much, guys. You are awesome. So yes, we now have this day, the People's Day, the day that the people have a voice. So this year we've worked on expanding what we set up over the last couple of years, and we've expanded our team. We now have representatives in nine different countries and nine US states. I'm happy to say that we've had quite a few states come out and give official recognition of World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. So included Massachusetts. Apparently it's been recognized not only in the House of Representatives, but now also in the Senate and also all the way to the governor's office. So that's great. There's Maryland, Alabama's come through, Connecticut's come through. Washington seems positive. So this is all great. This is excellent. And we've got various events going on in different locations. So we've got pamphlet distributions going on in France and in front of the City Hall, submitting letters to politicians. In England, they have the Rest Recovery Experience Sleeping Tablets and Tranquilizer Service. This is a voluntary service who look after people who are suffering from benzodiazepines and other drugs because the governments are failing to look after their own people. So these volunteers have to step in and fill the gap, and they're doing a wonderful job. In Japan, they had the third Ministry of Health visitation, where once again the victims marched onto the government premises and had their voices heard and submitted a petition. Apparently this year they emphasized the need for specialized withdrawal facilities for people withdrawing from benzodiazepines because they're far more complex cases than people, or certainly totally different cases from people withdrawing from other drugs, and very little is understood about benzodiazepine withdrawal. Because so much information seems to be hidden under the carpet, so to speak. There's also another front opened up in Japan. So not only have we got Tokyo now, we had Nagoya last time. I trust they're doing their good thing again. And we've had a new front open in Kobe. So that's great. That's new. And as far as New Zealand is concerned, well, as you know, I just returned here just before Christmas last year after 18 years in Japan. So big shock to the system, adjusting to life back here. So different, of course. But anyway, I took the initiative to hand out pamphlets in the local area where I'm living, in Taranaki. And so the response there was very positive, very different from Japan, but people were very open. And the general response was, gee, I wonder if I'm taking any of these. And they were quite keen to look at all the different benzodiazepine names on the back of the pamphlet. So I handed up to various places there, and everyone was sort of very open and saying, you're doing a great job and thank you. So that was good. And then yesterday I went out to the streets of Auckland, my hometown, and handed out pamphlets there. Basically, I just approached people and said, excuse me, do you know what day it is today? And they go, no. And I said, it's World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day. They kind of have a blank expression, and then I says, have you heard of drugs like Xanax or Valium, Mother's Little Helper? Oh, yes, I have. Oh, my husband's on those. Oh, I know someone on those. Oh, yes, by all means, take a pamphlet, and here's some information that you might find useful, and all the drug names are on the back, so people are quite open to that. And so managed to hand out about 250 pamphlets yesterday. Unlike the time I was in Japan, surrounded by about 30, 40, up to 50 different other campaigners, victims, and their supporters, this time I was completely alone. But that's okay, because my message is, it doesn't matter whether you do it as one or a group of 1,000. The main thing is that you do something, any little thing. It doesn't really matter, because it all adds up. And as you know, the World Benzo Day slogan is change through unity. So it's the unified effort that's really important. And I figure that because of, you know, that work, or any little thing that anyone does, it potentially saves someone unnecessary suffering. I mean, that's not to say that benzodiazepines don't have their place. I'm sure they're helpful in some situations. But as you know, I'm sure... the problem is that the doctors just keep repeatedly prescribing them over long periods of time and co-prescribing them. And that's where a lot of the problems are coming, just prolonged repetitive prescribing. Well, I understand that the recommended period is 2 to 4 weeks, but some people can develop dependency in as little as 1 week. So, people need to come out and speak up and give information about the potential risks, which really need to be properly controlled. So things that are going on in other countries, we've got representation in Canada, Poland, Scotland, and people are writing to their politicians and their health ministries, and we've got things going on in Colorado, Florida, Missouri, Texas, Washington, Wisconsin. So this is all unfolding now on our Facebook page. We've kind of got two Facebook pages going. There's the main WBAD Facebook page, which is accessible through our website, which is w-bad.org, and we've got a Facebook feed at the bottom there, which you can click on and go to the Facebook page. There's also another Facebook page called Friends attending friends attending WBAD, which is, we mainly set that up so that people can plan their activities and create groups and in their own local areas. But there are some posts going in there as well, I believe. So you can catch some action there. Other things, if people want to get involved in this day, by all means, I mean, even people that haven't been affected by these drugs, supporters, family, friends, or just concerned community members, you can go to the website. So again, w-bad.org, and then click on the Get Involved button and you'll see all the many things that you can do. It can be anything from as simple as sharing something on the internet, changing your profile picture on Facebook, to handing out a pamphlet, to wearing one of our shirts, or anything. The choices are many, or to writing to a politician. There's various ways that you can campaign by reporting adverse drug effects. So all of this is on our website, and a lot of it is easy to do, but it can make a big difference, especially when many people collaborate to help affect positive change. We've also had a promotion this year. It's a t-shirt promotion, and we have collaborated with Benzodiazepine Information Coalition, or BIC as it's known, BIC, and the film As Prescribed. And so the shirt has the word invisible written across it, and the IN is faded out and the visible is more prominent. And then below that, we have the World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, the BIC, and the As Prescribed, I'm just drawing a blank. What do you call them? Marks, icons, I'm not sure. Logos?
Logos, yeah. Sounds good.
Logos, that's the one, yep. We've got those. So basically, through us collaborating and the people coming together, what we're doing is making this invisible problem visible. And we hope that wearing those shirts, it's going to create a talking point where people come up and say, what is that all about? So it gives people a chance to explain and then lead to some dialogue about the issue. So that's good. And speaking of As Prescribed, they're out on location today filming the various presentations of the official state resolutions being handed over to WBAD representatives, and also filming the different events on location. In New York, we also have a husband and wife team running a marathon. They're doing fundraising to help raise funds to put towards completing the movie As Prescribed, and they're doing this for their son who was harmed by prescription benzodiazepines. And I have to emphasize that in all these cases, what we're talking about here are ordinary, everyday people taking these drugs as prescribed by the doctor. We are not talking about misuse or abuse or anything like that. We're talking about people taking them, putting their trust in their doctor and taking them as prescribed, ordinary everyday people. You've got teachers, you've got lawyers, you've got people that have worked for aerospace companies, professionals, and these drugs are harming ordinary everyday people big time and resulting in, of course, the subsequent socioeconomic costs, the cost to society, the cost through car accidents, crimes, hospital queuing, unemployment, and the list goes on. So that's what we're dealing with. For that reason, we're actually very big on the importance of language use. So we like to encourage people to use words like physical dependency or iatrogenic injury, and we try to deter people from using words like addiction, addicts, users, or drug abuse, which the media tend to use a lot, and it really harms our campaign for people to be using words like that. We need to be clear on what the issue is here. The issue is not abuse or misuse at all. It's over-prescribing or reckless prescribing, if we were to put it on the other foot, you know.
Let me interrupt a second here, and because I really, really think that's important. I fall into that trap all the time, using words like addiction and abuse, because I'm often addressing people that that's meaningful to. And I think you're absolutely right. The vast majority of people that I see in my practice, that I see in my legal work, they have not themselves spontaneously become users of these drugs. They have become people who were given the drugs by physicians, general practitioners, internists, psychiatrists. Often the psychiatrists were giving them the worst and largest doses, because my colleagues in psychiatry are often the most arrogant and the most free in their dispensing of multiple psychiatric drugs and bad combinations. And I just think that this is worth stopping on for a minute. You've been giving us a tremendous amount of information, so I want you to take a breath too, and the audience to take a breath. But this is like worth really just mulling on, that we have bought this whole idea of calling people addicts and calling them abusers, because that's what the diagnostic manual calls them, when maybe you have data on this, Wayne, but the vast majority of people that are in one way or another, say, hooked on sedative benzodiazepines, haven't they begun with treatment?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Do you have data on that, or your own impressions?
Well actually, I don't, but no doubt we're talking about, of course, exist two separate problems. You have the people that use these drugs for recreational purposes, and then you have people that take them exactly as they're prescribed by their doctor. So we're concerned with the latter, and that's why we emphasize the importance of language use, so that we can clearly distinguish, because too much of the stigma is being put onto the patient and the patient is being blamed, but that's not what it's about. And in order for our campaign to be effective, we have to be clear on what we're campaigning about. So we do have a page on our website. People can go to w-bad.org. You can click on the site map on the top menu, and then right at the top you can find dependence versus addiction. Click on that and then scroll down to where it says language matters, and we've got a whole list of words that we encourage people not to use, and we've got a list of words that we encourage people to use, and that list is currently being updated.
Give us a couple of examples of words not to use.
Okay, I'm just going to go to that page right now.
Give us some examples, and I want to talk about this a little bit, because this is a profound point you're making. I don't do enough about it. Hardly anybody does enough about it. You may be one of the few people in the world doing anything about it.
Well, actually, to be honest, Peter, I've been guilty of misusing language myself.
Yeah, we all are. We all are.
And I think I'm actually 52 years old now, but when I was growing up, using the word addiction was sort of just standard. It didn't really necessarily relate to recreational use. And indeed, a lot of the older generation, they still use those words, but they don't intend for those words to be damaging in any way.
List for a minute, Wayne, remind you. Slow down a minute. You got a lot to say, but we got to slow down for the sake of listeners and for the sake of your interviewer.
Sure.
So, folks, remember the call-in number, 888-874-4888. Now, listen, I know there's enough of you listening to fill a huge hall. I got the numbers here. But you're not calling in, in part because Wayne is so interesting. You don't want to miss anything. But I really want to involve you. And I know this is new, but I'm begging you to help us get started with call-ins. Because I know you're listening. I got the numbers. So, so for goodness sakes, call in. Ask Wayne something about benzos. Ask me something about benzos. Share your experience with benzos, because I want to break the mold of 8 or 9 years or whatever it is of not taking callers and have you call in and talk with us. And you can't do that when it goes into the archive, where most people listen, is in the archives, and you can't call in and ask a question. The number is 888-874-4888. Give a call in. We really want to hear from you. I want to establish a new pattern. Old habits are hard to break, I know. Think about what I've gone through to set it up this way, breaking old habits. So give me a hand, and let's start having conversations on the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, other than just my conversation with my guest. And so, Wayne, what do you got in the way of names, the words
that we use? Sure. So the ones that we try to encourage people to use are words like iatrogenic or iatrogenesis, which means medically induced or caused by medical examination or treatment. In other words, caused by the doctor. Prescribed dose, medication or drug dependence, as prescribed, doctor prescribed or taken as directed. Therapeutic dose use, benzodiazepines, as opposed to calling them benzos, although that's quite convenient because it's short. But a lot of the problems, Peter, I think, is a lot of this language has been bastardized by the media and how it's associated. But anyway, let me continue. Doctor treatment induced, benzodiazepine associated disability, damage, neurotoxicity, brain and central nervous system changes, disruption, physical illness, as opposed to, we try to encourage people not to use these words. Words like addiction, addicted, hooked, high, addicts, users, abusers, misuse, abuse, use, clean, sober, detox, overdose, or I'm not quite sure, but and street nicknames such as Zennies and Bennies and things like that. So that's just a basic list. What else? I do have something else here, if you just give me a second.
Yeah, but take a look. Folks, this is medically induced neurotoxicity, which then changes the brain. It changes the way the neurotransmitters work. For example, when you're taking a benzodiazepine or virtually any psychiatric drug, but it's very noticeable with the sedative drugs, when you give anyone or take a sedative drug, it can be you, it could be your pet, it could be, all kinds of individuals. And when you do that, the brain doesn't like it. The brain doesn't like any of these drugs. So when you suppress your brain gets hyperactive. When you try to put your brain to sleep with even a small dose given to you by your doctor, when your doctor, let's say it this way, when your doctor is trying to put your brain to sleep, that'd be a new language change for me. When your doctor's trying to put your brain to sleep, your brain is fighting back and trying to keep you awake. So you are enmeshed in a mighty contest between your doctor and your brain. I like it this way. This is really right on. You are stuck in the middle as a human being in a war between your doctor and your brain. Because your brain's saying, no, 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 I'm going to stay awake. I'm going to fight this. This is intoxication. This is a neuro assault on my brain, a neurotoxic assault. I am not going to sleep. I'm not going to reduce my acuity and my anxiety. My anxiety is mine. It's my signal system. I'm not going to let this happen. And so naturally, you are stuck in the middle of this, and it's very confusing and very distressing and very disturbing. And while you stand by and watch, and your doctor then ups the dose in his fight with your brain, I mean, you're here hearing this for the first time described in this way. I'm hearing it for the first time. Your doctor in a brawl with your brain, suppressing it, your brain fighting back. And then when this drug is stopped, when you're not getting it anymore, when he's or she's removed it, or you not being warned that you must withdraw slowly, you must withdraw slowly, you must have some supervision, your family must be involved, friends must be involved. When you're not aware of how dangerous it is to come off this drug, because you're just standing by watching this fight between your doctor and your brain, you can be stuck with an extremely hyperactive brain where you can't sleep, you're agitated, you're anxious, you're angry, you're irritable, you feel out of control, you feel absolutely horrible. No one recognizes you for yourself, including yourself. And you could have some lasting difficulties like this even when you get off the meds. I mean, so if you've been on them for months and years, you can have lasting difficulties that are hard to recover from, and they're very, very serious. And you just want to avoid this medical trap. Avoid the fight between your brain and your doctor. Wayne, I really like this concept, and I might do a little blog about it. Because that's what happens. You're passive. Yeah. You know what's going on. Is the patient, the client. You know, it's your doctor trying to do something to your brain. And most likely, if he's that kind of doctor, he's not even thinking about you. He's actually thinking about your brain.
Right.
He's actually thinking about it. So it's a struggle between
your brain.
Yeah,
maybe it's treating you like a machine and thinks that one fix sort of does all and everything's going to be okay. But I don't think the human body kind of works that way. And interesting that you mentioned, Peter, that your body fights the presence of the drug. And so, of course, that's as you know, called tolerance. And people develop tolerance. And when that happens, it's similar to, I guess, the same sort of phenomena seen in alcoholism. And then when that happens, people can get tolerance withdrawal, or they start getting withdrawal symptoms, even though they're still taking the drug as prescribed. And when they complain to their doctor that their symptoms have returned, or they're getting worse, or they've got new ones, they often say that it's just your original condition has got worse, or now you've got this, and then it just paves the way for more drugs, and it just escalates the whole problem. And I'd just like to talk about some of the damages that these drugs can cause. So, of course, we've got tolerance. We've got the prescribed physical psychological dependence and tolerance withdrawal, the interdose withdrawal. I guess it's when the blood levels drop between doses. You've got the withdrawal symptoms, the acute, the chronic, and the protracted, which can last for months and years. The neurological injury, the toxicity, and the adverse reactions. And then the paradoxical reactions, and perhaps even permanent or, you know, long-lasting damage. So it's quite a mix there that people really need to understand. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Talk about it some more. I started to talk about it just now, and I think that kind of got you thinking more about we need to cover that.
Yeah.
So talk some more. Take a minute and think about your own experience and share that if you like.
Right. So basically, I did get tolerance withdrawal. So my symptoms returned during the treatment and they got worse and I got new ones and I went back to the doctor. And of course, it was all my fault. It was my original condition was getting worse. And he just keep saying, well, just another month of these drugs and you'll get better. And then just keep repeating the same thing a month later. And I was, in fact, getting worse. And in fact, everything, I felt like I was falling into hell. And so to speak, but so I ended up changing hospitals and then they misdiagnosed me and then they just gave me more benzodiazepines and it just went from bad to worse. And so I wasn't able to get the help that I needed. And I think I speak on behalf of many, many people when I say that.
What was your total exposure time, Wayne? We're talking to Wayne Douglas and he's co-founder of Today, July 11th, which is... World, tell them what it is, Wayne. Remind them again.
Yes, World Benzodiazepine Awareness Day, otherwise known as WBAD. The People's Day, the day that people have a voice because they're so often shut away and not heard. So this is the People's Day. It's the day to speak up about the dangers of these drugs and the damages they're causing people, innocent people in our society, and the risk that everyone is at, which... brings me to a discussion on a recent international task force that was set up that they seem to claim that all this talk that benzos have adverse reactions and that they can be high risk is all not true. And people have say that they're that these claims that they're high risk drugs have not been based on good science, and that it was an illusion of the truth. And one person said something about the withdrawal from benzodiazepines is no worse than a withdrawal after a strong cup of coffee or something. Well, I'd hate to think what kind of coffee this guy is drinking. I mean, what has he got in it? Plutonium or something?
No, he's got benzo. He's probably got benzos.
Yeah, I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. And for these so-called scientists to come out and write things like this, which is actually contrary to what's happening. I mean, while people are arguing on paper with words and studies, you've got real people in the real world with real stories that are really suffering. And they need to be listening to these people and the stories. Forget about your papers. Put them down. Go and talk to the patients. As Professor Ashton said, it was the patients who first realized the problem with benzodiazepines, not the doctors. Why? Because they're the ones living it. They know firsthand. And no one knows better than the patients. So it's time for doctors just to think outside the square, sit down and listen. Listen to what's really happening with real people in the real world. Forget the papers. And then maybe write some papers based on reality. That would be good.
Yeah, one of the things that's going on, which is very interesting, is more and more physicians are actually writing about what's on the internet. Malcolm Ladder and other people in Great Britain have been involved in this, and some people in Australia, trying to see what are the patterns of reported problems on the internet. And of course, this would have been considered madness a very short time ago. Oh no, the only thing you can rely on is the 4 to 6 week trial conducted to get approval of the drug. 4 to 6 weeks, you know, and it gets approved as safe and effective by the agencies around the world, including our own FDA. But more and more people are turning now, professionals, to find what's on the internet. And I've been doing that a long time. It provides enormous signals to see the patterns of what people are reporting on the internet as troubling them. And I think benzodiazepine researchers have been really leading in that regard. Are you familiar with that much, Wayne?
Sorry, Peter. I'm totally rude. I was completely thinking about something else.
Go ahead with something. God bless you for your honesty. Go ahead with something else. What's on your mind?
Sure. I was just thinking that as far as raising awareness about this problem is concerned, and I pointed out that many people are suffering, but it's important to point out that everyone's experience with these drugs is different. Of course, you've got all these different individual factors. So some people might suffer a little. Some people might suffer a lot. Some people might still be able to go to work. Others are just bedbound. So it varies from individual to individual, but there is a large group of people out there, thousands out there, that are suffering. It needs to be looked into. And also, many people who are suffering don't realize that they're suffering from benzodiazepine withdrawal. They know there's something wrong, but they don't know what it is, and their doctor doesn't know what it is. So a lot of cases are going under the radar, and that's why I think...
Absolutely. Wayne, we have a caller from Boston. Lauren, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Lauren, thank you for calling, for goodness sake. How are you?
Well, you know, thank you for the work you do. I so admire your work, Dr. Bricken, and, of course, Wayne, for establishing the day that we recognize today.
Thank you for calling in. Lauren, why do you think people are so reluctant to change the format of the show that I'm trying to change so they can call in and ask questions? Any idea?
I think adjusting to change. Like, if this is the first year, and
this is the first week or two. This is like the second show we've had callers, but we've done well. Second or third, but we've had callers, but not a huge number. I mean, if I were talking to an audience this size, I'd have 45 people waving their hands at me. So
sure.
I'm trying to figure out why. But let me give that number again. And if you don't call today, call next week, because next week I'm really depending on people to call in. So make up your questions, make up your comments in advance. Next week, 888-874-4888. And don't leave me in the lurch. Talk to me. I don't want to talk. Well, I can talk for an hour by myself. I do it lots of times in conferences, do it all the time in conferences. But I want to get my audience participating. Did you have thoughts or thank you, by the way, for your praise. I appreciate it more than you can imagine. It means a lot to me. I've got a long history of having to stand up to a lot of abuse, but I've also received a lot of support, and thank you. Did you have a thought about the program or
a
question?
Well, you know what? I mean, I can, you know, share with you a very succinct history of my story, if that's helpful.
Yes.
You know, way, way back in 1982, I was prescribed Xanax. I honestly don't remember asking for it. I may have said to one of my doctors that I'm experiencing stress. And, you know, back then I was about 21 years old and trusted the doctor. The doctor was the authority figure and took the medication. And I can say that it absolutely altered the course of my life. I was on really like no psych meds until then, and now, you know, 35 years of various psych meds, including benzos. But the good news is that, you know, a couple of years ago, and actually 2015, I stumbled across Anatomy of an Epidemic. That's a book that really changed my life.
Bob Whitaker's great book, yes.
Yeah, that when I read that book, I remember calling Bob and saying, Bob, this is for me, this book is the truth. You know, all the questions that I had for so many years, going to various doctors with, you know, a myriad of physiological complaints, and having each doctor, whether it was a psychiatrist, psychologist, gastroenterologist, general practitioner, you know, I repeatedly asked, do you think it's the medication? You know, these various health issues, and was continually told, no, no, it's not the medication. And like so many other people, I was told I could never go off psychiatric medication. It wasn't an option. And so what people, you know, like Bob and Wayne and you, I mean, I so appreciate everyone that is shining a light on this issue.
Tell us more. Tell me more how you're doing now.
Well, I am about 18 months off of Ativan that I took for about 35 years. I'm currently tapering off an antidepressant, Wellbutrin. It's really, really tough going. I think that maybe my nervous system was stressed from the Ativan taper. So it's stressful. It's going slowly, and I'm unable to work right now. And that's my situation.
So you're entirely off of the Ativan.
I am.
That's an amazing achievement. And were you just taking off the Ativan separately from reducing the Wellbutrin?
Well, you know, I was on both, and I had a previous bad experience trying to get off the Wellbutrin. And after I learned that the medication was the problem, I said, well, why don't I start with the benzo? So I started tapering off that, not with the help of my doctor, but with the wonderful, online Facebook support groups, people that have experienced this volunteer their time. So they, you know, do that every day. And so that's how I got off the Ativan over the course of about 13 months.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the reasons why you're having so much trouble coming off the Wellbutrin is that your brain is normally going to be hyperactive after coming off of the Ativan. So you have your brain is naturally had all that experience of fighting the Ativan. And then on top of it, the Wellbutrin has a stimulating effect as well. So for people listening, it's generally better if you're coming off something like Ativan and you're also taking a stimulating antidepressant, is to take a little bit of the Ativan, then a little of the antidepressant, then a little of the Ativan, a little of the antidepressant. So I think one of the reasons maybe it'll just help you to know that you're having that difficulty is probably that you didn't come off of them, you know, doing a bit of Ativan, then a bit of the Wellbutrin, and back and forth over a period of time.
Okay.
Do you have any kind of help right now? That professional help?
You know, I have a general practitioner, integrative physician, who is prescribing the Wellbutrin.
Are you on anything else?
I am not.
Mm-hmm, good, good.
You know, that's good.
Are you having trouble sleeping?
The sleeping is okay. I mean, right now, I would say my top two symptoms, GI issues, really struggling with just having like a settled stomach that, you know, wants to be able to eat and digest and metabolize nutrition. That's tough. And I also get some kind of bizarre headaches. So I would say those are probably my top two.
All right. Well, I have a really important suggestion for you in terms of diet.
I'm listening to you because I'm really struggling, Dr. Bregan. I am, you know, it's fair to say, you know, I'm emaciated.
Oh, my.
And so, yeah.
Okay. I want you to look up the work of Pam Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R, and I want you to look up the work of the two doctors named Campbell. It's a father and a son.
Okay.
And the father and the son originally wrote the China study.
Okay.
And the son has written a book about it that's more of a popular book. There's two new books out from this father-son combination.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get their titles here.
Sure.
But the original book, and it's Colin Campbell, C-O-L-I-N, Campbell, Ph.D.
Okay.
And then his son is Thomas Campbell, M.D.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And look them up and look at their newer books. They have smaller, newer books. And look up Pam Popper. And the idea is the plant-based diet, the whole food plant-based diet. And you can use my email if you're having trouble locating it, use my email, breganlive@hotmail.com. I can't usually answer individual questions, but in this case, go to breganlive@hotmail.com. And I'll give you a little bit more accurate information on the books, I'm just getting used to myself doing callers, so I don't have some of the important information on hand. So, Wayne, did you have any suggestions for her?
So you're still tapering now, you say?
Yeah, I'm tapering an antidepressant right now. I'm off the benzo, which is good news. Tapering the AD after decades on it. And I'm eating healthful foods, trying to eat a little bit more like grazing, several small meals a day. It's challenging.
Yeah, actually, I found the most useful thing for me going through recovery post-withdrawal or post-abstinence from benzodiazepines was just to get the regularity into my life. So trying to get up at the same time, trying to go to bed at the same time, try to move with nature, have regular meals at regular times so that your body gets back in sync again. I found that was really helpful. And then I think it's just a case of time for your body to make the adjustments and just be good to yourself and do what works for you. Everyone's different, but that would be my advice, and all the very best for the rest of the recovery.
Lauren,
Thank you.
thank you. Anything else? You know, you kind of saved me today because,
Oh.
I mean, I'm sitting here. Why aren't people getting used to calling? I think there's an intimidation too. I forget that it's a people have me on a level at times that makes them a little uneasy getting in touch. And of course, it's
Sure.
practically impossible to get in touch with me in general because
Yeah.
we just don't have the capacity to respond to the need, which is so huge. But here on the radio, I'm making this time, and I really want folks calling in. So remember the number, 888-874-4888. Lots of eights, 888-874-4888. Because next week, I'm taking a plunge, folks. I'm banking on some of you, three, four, five of you, to call in for a general discussion of what's on our minds. And I'm not even sure until I get there what I'll be talking about, but I will be talking about the things you're familiar with and maybe a little more than usual about how to live life. You know, how do
Actually,
we? Go
Peter,
ahead, Wayne.
sorry to interrupt, but I realize we've only got a couple of minutes. And
Yes.
just on that point about people speaking up, I can't emphasize that enough. By all means, please speak up. There's many people out there with you. It's so important to raise your voice. And people have asked me why it's been successful in Japan, the campaigning, and I would put that down to people speaking up, coming together, marching on to the ministry. Having organization and leadership, and also the doctors working with the patients in this campaigning and the media supporting. So we've had combinations of doctors, patients coming forward, and the media, and that has been the secret to Japan's success. So I'd really encourage that in other countries. And like you say, Peter, people should call in and speak up.
Yeah, that's really, I'm glad you put that emphasis on it because another thing I wasn't putting emphasis on that, just to call in and speak up about your own experiences. I want to be taking two or three callers. So listen, we've been talking with Wayne Douglas. You can find him easily. He is the benzodiazepine man who's organizing this big day today around the world. Lauren from Boston, thank you for calling in. And above all, you know, Wayne Douglas, thank you for all the work you're doing. And everybody out there, thank you for how
Thank
long
you.
this show has gone on. Bye-bye
Thank you,
now,
Peter. All the best to everyone today. Go hard. Thank you very
Wayne.
much.
Okay. Bye-bye,
Thank you.
all. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.